Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All right, the lads, it is the Weekender with me, a croaky Gareth Roberts. Hopefully one day soon my voice will recover, but it's not today. But anyway, I am joined by Joe Richards, Alison McGovern and Neil Atkinson. Loads to talk about, as ever, in the world of Liverpool and beyond. We're going to talk about the friendly results so far, what we think about that, what we think about the new season ahead. In the middle, we've got the excellent Brian Reid talking about his new book, Diamonds in the Mud. A bit of a cherry cinnamon reference there, well in Bry. Keen to hear about that one. And then we'll be back to talk more about the Reds and a little bit about the new record British transfer, £100 million for Jack Grealish. What does that mean for Man City? What does that mean for us? And are Liverpool ever going to spend any money? But going back to the friendly results first of all then. So far, Liverpool have drawn 1-1 with Wacker Innsbruck. drawn 1-1 with Stuttgart, beat Mainzer 1-0, lost 4-3 to Hertha Berlin, beat Bologna 2-0, beat Bologna 1-0. That was a weird, wasn't it? And you've got Bilbao on Sunday at 4 o'clock, you've got Osasuna on Monday at 7 o'clock, both of which we shall be covering in depth on the Anfield Wrap, of course. And then next Saturday, away, 5:30, Norwich, the real stuff starts. Followed by Burnley at home the following week at Anfield. Full crowd in, the full it, footy as we know and love it. I'll start with you, Joel. What have you made of what you've seen so far with pre-season? Concerned, happy, nothing?
I don't know. I'm a bit nonplussed, I think. Obviously, the younger you are, at times you take more results, literally, when you're a younger kid. But I think, from my perspective, it's the first proper pre-season we've had in 2 years. So that's took a bit of getting used to. This whole new concept of 30-minute games, 60-minute games is a bit of a head scratcher at the best of times. So I'll be honest, I've only watched the matches this morning because I was a bit busy yesterday. But I did watch the full 60 minutes. I committed to it. And
go ahead, lad.
Yeah, I think it is a weird one because obviously with the fact that we've had two major tournaments going on, players are staggered coming back. You've had the likes of Mane, Salah, who've had the first full pre-season in what feels like forever since they've been at Liverpool. They've never really had a full pre-season. They've always been dropping in at a moment's notice, just a week to go before the season starts. So for them, I think for the purposes of that, it's been great. Obviously, it's been great seeing Van Dijk and Gomez also coming back. They've had a full pre-season in to get back up to full fitness. And obviously, they're still going to be a bit rusty, but, you know, they've got two more games between now and the opener at Norwich. And even if they don't start at Norwich next Saturday, I won't be too concerned because obviously we've had Matip and Konate playing as well. So we've got strength and depth there at centre-back for the first time, it feels like, in ages. So I think the thing for me, I've been impressed by seeing the likes of Harvey Elliott coming back in and getting a go, the likes of Kate Gordon having a chance as well. So it's always wanting to see young players who might have an opportunity this season. And for me, I think it's been great getting accustomed to those players and hopefully players we'll get to know more of over the coming season.
Yeah, Alison, Joel mentioned opportunity and obviously pre-season friendlies offer that. for players that you maybe forgot about, not thought about. I guess that applies to the manager as well. I mean, we'd like to think it wouldn't do, but he's definitely got his favourites. He's definitely got his first 11, and I think we could all write it down right now. But you've got players like there are pre-season winners, I think, in speech marks, if you like, who could potentially now be looking at minutes on the basis of what they've done. So, you know, yesterday, Klopp named Tsimikas. He named Czech Minamino. Obviously, Naby, there's been a lot of talk around him. £53 million man. Will he ever show that worth at Liverpool, all the rest of it? Konate got mentioned there. You know, will he start? What's been your impression? I mean, would you be up in arms if Tsimikas is starting against Norwich, for example?
No, I definitely wouldn't be up in arms. I would think that was a good thing, having had the season past in which, you know, at times it felt like our injury list was the first team. The idea of, as Joel just said, strength in depth, you know, feels like luxurious, you know, to have that. So I wouldn't be upset about it at all. I think it's been quite a funny preseason because of because of the Euros to a certain extent, because I think that obviously dominates mindsets. It dominates, you know, where one or two of our players are and where their heads have been. On the favourite players point, who was it who was interviewed who got asked who's Klopp's favourite player, and he just said Virgil? Was that Fabinho on Instagram?
Yeah.
I thought that was really funny. It's like, yeah, it's Virgil. Yeah. He's the manager's favourite. Like, they all know.
He's everyone's
Like, that's kind of sweet in a way. So I think particularly with the funny kind of makeup of the games, it's felt to me like, okay, this is an interesting preseason. It starts really in earnest, you know, on Sunday, and I think we'll see a lot more then. But hopefully what it shows is that, you know, that full squad looks good. I think there are a lot of options there. You know, the idea of not being terrified about our injury list is that is an exciting prospect season to come.
That is nice.
The funny makeup of the games thing that Alison says there, what it actually, I think that's done, the two half an hour ones and then the one the mad hour with the half mini sort of half time thing that felt like it just killed everybody in a strange way. What I think that's actually reminded and should have reminded us of is the real work of pre-season we don't see. It's all the stuff that's happening in day-to-day training. We don't get to see that.
It kind of felt like actually watching training.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I thought, didn't it? Like, it was great. I'm, like, happy watching them, but it did feel like you were watching a training session.
And I think that you got to sort of, there's bits in there, it's interesting to me that they go from the 4-3, where they were sloppy at times, to be quite honest with you. I thought the shape, defensive shape, against Bologna, both teams, both sides of the half time, the quality I thought of the general play dipped in the second half, in inverted commas, of both hour long games. But the quality of Liverpool's defensive shape didn't. As soon as they lost the ball, they were getting back in. The gaps between the players was absolutely tiny. They were looking to counter. I thought they looked really, really impressive out of possession. And for me, the big winner of the 2 1-hour games yesterday was not Klopp's favourite player and not the new signing. I thought Gomez looked exceptional. I thought he just looked like the footballer he was for those six games in Virgil's absence.
He mentioned his passing, didn't he, Klopp, afterwards? So, you know, he did get a little shout there. And I'm a big, big fan of Joe, and I think he's still underrated, both in the wider world, but also amongst our own support.
Yeah, I think if you're playing against literally the best centre-half, playing next to the best centre-half on the planet, which is what Virgil van Dijk is, then whoever plays next to him is going to go a little bit under the radar. But Gomez, you know, he's had an excellent 2.5 years at Liverpool, but the big question is when he can get on the pitch. But I think what was interesting as well was when he's playing without van Dijk, he goes left-hand side, and he does that for Konate. We saw it last season with Matip. It feels to me as though, I don't think we'll see Virgil do the full 38 plus all the others that we've seen in the past, all the Europeans. I think they'll manage him a bit more. And it wouldn't surprise me if it's only by the second half of the season you get Van Dijk and Gomez week in, week out. What you might get a little bit of is Gomez almost being Van Dijk's understudy a little bit. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. What I mean is that when Virgil doesn't play, Gomez will go left-hand side, and then the other centre-half will then come in next. And I think you might get a bit of that in the early part of the season. And the other one that you mentioned, well, two that you've mentioned there, Gareth, Tsimikas and Keita. I think Tsimikas has shown why we invested in him and why we paid the money over the course of the pre-season. And, you know, you still expect, for instance, Park Norwich for a second, Chelsea at home. If Andy Robertson's fit, you think he's playing. But the flip side of that is that if Andy Robertson wasn't fit, what we've seen so far is I wouldn't be going, oh no, all, you know, everything's about to fall apart. I'd go, let's see what this lad can do. And for me, I think Kite has been just terrific, just fantastic to watch. And I think he's, and it's something that Alison said on shows in the past when she's come on and talked about sort of players building relationships. And I think that's something that Kite has always struggled to do at Liverpool because he's injury hit. But I think you've been beginning to see him build relationships with his teammates on the pitch. He plays that lovely ball with the backspin on to Salah yesterday, where Salah almost works out whilst it's in midair. This isn't a bad pass. This is a great pass. And their defence doesn't know where they are. And I'm really excited about Keita. And I really, you know, you want to talk about, I'm not bothered who starts against Norwich. I'm desperate to see Keita start against Norwich. I really want him to be in there. And putting himself about him and trying to establish himself as someone's got to take this shirt off me. That's what I really want
to
see.
I just wanted to go back to Gav's point there about Gomez being underrated. I think that's definitely right, because I think a lot of people forget about the start of the season we had in 18-19 with him and Van Dijk at centre-back. We hardly conceded the goal for the first five. I think the only goals we conceded, I think we conceded like three goals in the first eight games or something like
that. There's a soft one at Leicester.
Yeah, the soft one. That was Alisson, yeah.
That's on the keeper, yeah.
That's down on the goal, yeah. And then Chelsea away, I remember Hazard scored a well-taken solo goal, but apart from that, him and Van Dijk look absolutely solid at centre-back right up until Gomez gets that unfortunate injury at Burnley in December. I thought Gomez was absolutely fantastic, and I'd even go as far to say he was Van Dijk's equal in that period. And it was such a shame he got the injury at that time, because obviously we go on to win the Champions League, but for that injury, he's starting in Madrid.
Alison, if these were the results for the pre-season so far, how would you be feeling? So say Liverpool had beat Tranmere 6-0, they'd beat Bradford 3-1, they'd lost to Borussia Dortmund 3-2, they'd lost to Sofia 2-1, they drew with Sporting 2-2, they got battered 3-0 by Napoli, and then they pulled it back at the end of the pre-season by winning 3-1 against Lyon. Would you be worried about the season ahead if they were the results?
No, not particularly.
You shouldn't be, because that's when we won the league.
No, exactly.
We got it.
Yeah. I knew it.
Because we got it. I got Conor Lacey, who's on work experience with us, to look at the last few years' pre-seasons. I can't go through them all because it'd be dead boring if I read out loads of results.
Yeah.
I'd try and do Marky Smith when he did final score, but I wouldn't bet at it because that's absolutely brilliant. One for the kids.
Is this just because of the voice? You're like, yeah, Marky Smith, I'm on it.
Slam me a nil. Liverpool 6. But I mean, my point being after side is it does kind of mean nothing, doesn't it? I mean, we had Steve Warnock in yesterday for Proview, and I said that to him, and he was like, fans always say that. He said, but you don't want to be losing them all, and you don't want to be playing, you don't want to be playing shite, and you don't want to be looking around going, what's going on here, boys? And he said, a bit, yeah, it doesn't matter, but a bit it does.
I think, obviously, a bit it does, but they're trying to get adrenaline flowing. They're trying to get minds in the right headspace. I mean, the truth is that when you're playing week in, week out, it does something to your physical and mental form, doesn't it? So that you are match fit. Mm. And the point of pre-season is you can't go from nothing on your holidays to the start of you can't go from 0 to 60 in zero time. So they're trying to get minds and bodies in the right kind of space. And that, so in that sense, is completely meaningless, like, because it does not matter if you lose, as long as it does its job, which is get you in the right physical and mental place to actually play a game. I think the point that we started with, which is, you know, of the players who has taken the opportunity to make an impact, to say to the manager, over here, I'm over here. Like, it probably means a lot more than it actually does to supporters. I think there's a side thing, which is, you know, traditionally the pre-season friendlies, particularly the ones at Anfield, are the ones that it's been possible to get tickets to. And it's always been one where you can more take kids. So, like, there'll be a lot of people in Anfield on Sunday for whom it's their first game at Anfield, and that's really lovely. And kids are going free as well, so... You know, I think there's a side thing for fans, which is it's often a big day for families. And, you know, I think it will be that on Sunday in particular, that there'll be a lot of young people at Anfield, and it will have that pre-season buzz of, like, it doesn't really matter. They just, like, there's a lot of kids, they want to see their favourite player, and, you know, half the team will change every 10 minutes and it will have that feeling. And that's what is really, really important. I think really the results don't matter.
But that sounds great, doesn't it? What Alison just said there, because, yeah, you know, I seen Klopp saying yesterday it'll be the biggest atmosphere we've played in for 18 months. He can't wait to get there. He hopes we're looking forward to it as well. Yeah, we are, mate. Because you know, a few of us might have been lucky enough. I was, you know, to get to one of the COVID games, if you like. But frankly, they were weird.
Yeah.
You know, they were nothing like the normal experience. You were not with, the people you normally go with. The pubs were shut. The chippies were shut. There's loads of checks to get in and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not bemoaning it. I was made up to get in there. But Sunday and Burnley definitely is the football we know and love, isn't it?
I think what's really good here is the build towards Burnley. So for me, I'm really looking forward to Sunday and Monday. I'm sitting as close as I could get to the pitch in one and in the upper main on the other, just for the novelty of it, you know what I mean? I'm really looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to sitting with Steve, who I normally sit sort of on my own, although we've got a great crew around us in the lower centenary. But I'm looking forward to sitting with Steve a little bit as well and sort of talking through it. But what I am looking forward to is what Alison's described there, which is there'll be a lot of people for whom it's a first game back, but it's a first game. And there'll be a lot of people, you know, for instance, I really want to see a Mo Salah goal. Not for Mo Salah, not because I think it makes any difference to Liverpool's season, but because there'll be a lot of young people in there who do not get what we're been lucky to get prior to COVID, which is the opportunity to watch Mo Salah play football on a regular basis, who will see him as, you know, the most exciting human they've ever known in their lives. So I think that, you know, I do hope Liverpool put a little bit of a show on, and I think that they will, and I think it'll act as a wonderful way to whet your appetite before that first home game against Burnley. And even that, you know, Burnley then leads itself to Chelsea bank holiday weekend. That'll be absolutely phenomenal as well. And you're building towards something, the European champions, one of the sides, you know, contending for the title with us. And then not too long after that, there'll be the first Anfield game under the lights in Europe. That'll be amazing. And then start of October, it's Manchester City at home, which will be, you know, if Liverpool can have got the momentum up that we all hope they will, that's a season-defining game. You know, for me, I see all of these things as part of a piece that peaks at that City game. And, you know, Sunday and Monday is the start of it. And I hope there is a lot of young people in there. I hope there's a lot of people who don't often get to go. And I hope they're looking forward to an absolutely fabulous time, because I know I am. And I've been lucky to go loads, but I am absolutely desperate. I'm going to bounce into that ground, smiles on faces, and just get right into it.
Well, I'm really excited for Sunday, because you're speaking about people's first times there. I'm taking my nephew to his first game on Sunday, and I really hope he enjoys it, just because obviously you want to pass it on to him. And he's already been asking, is the man with the glasses going to be there? Aww. And I've had to say, I'm going to have to disappoint him, because that man is not wearing his glasses anymore. So. So I might have to have a little quiet, oh, he's not there, you know. But the same with Salah scoring, because obviously you know Salah, everyone knows Salah. So I just really hope that he gets into it. And the fact that it's a friendly, it's one of those where you ease them in rather than going in full throttle on a
derby. Where are you
sitting? Well, I call it the Lower Kemlin, the Kenny's Agley Sands. So, yeah, taking him, his dad and my dad. So, yeah, nice little family day out for us. And for me as well, it's my first home game in nearly 2 years. And the fact that I'm more excited for my nephew than I am myself, because I was just desperate to get back anyway. But the fact that I'm taking someone who's first time, and that I know it's going to be his first game, where I can't really remember, man, just to see how he reacts to it, and whether, although it's not going to be a full house, it might ease him in a bit more, rather than being all shouty and sweary and whatever else. At least with a friendly, it's more, not relaxed, but obviously there's not much riding on it, so hopefully it'll
ease him. I think also there will be, how old is he?
He's five.
He's five. Yeah. So I think there will be a lot of kids there, and like, it often is the way, and it does give this kind of like massively upbeat atmosphere, and I think that is kind of special, and you know, particularly for the players who perhaps haven't been around to know that so much, or like nobody's really been doing this over the past few years. I think it will feel very nice, win, lose or draw. I think it will be a great atmosphere.
I might get emotional, you know. I'm
going to get emotional.
Yeah, I think I might well up a bit for, you know, for Cologne. I don't know why I should be saying this on the podcast, but yeah, I might
get emotional. You're allowed to be emotional,
Joel. Yeah, I might get you know.
You read my Rats reviews, they're awful. Just rely on the emotion.
I cried when I finished the book the other day. I don't know what happened there. On the subject of books, Brian Reid has got a new book out, Diamonds in the Mud, where he explores working class heroes their courage, their determination, and why people don't talk about them maybe as much as they should. John has spoken to Brian about that book. We shall be back shortly.
It's John Gibbons for The Weekender, and I'm joined over Zoom by Brian Reid, who's got a new book out, Diamonds in the Mud. Now, I'm doing something extensive with Brian on this for our subscribers. That should be out already at the moment. And so if you haven't listened to that, it's 40 minutes or so with Brian on lots of things that come out of this book and a bit more in detail on the chapters, particularly around Liverpool Football Club. But we're just going to do a little bit now on the book in general, Brian. And Diamonds in the Mud, about working class heroes. Why is it you wanted to write it, first of all?
It'd been knocking around in my head for quite a while that this country, we kind of teach our kids our history through the narrow prism of people at the top, monarchs, public school educated prime ministers and kind of generals, etc. Whereas those below are almost incidental and hardly get a look in. And I wanted to kind of write a big piece about why that's wrong and why it should change and why this class-ridden country needs to give more of a voice to working class to change how the whole system works. And also that the working class kids themselves need inspiration. And what better way to inspire them through stories of heroes who've risen from the same background as them and made it to the top. So I realized that in the 40 odd years I've been a journalist, I've been lucky enough or determined enough to get interviews with a lot of my own heroes, like Bill Shankly and Jack Jones and Dennis Skinner and Muhammad Ali and I work with the Hillsborough Mothers and many more whose names now are eluding me. like the people, the fans supporting food banks and people like that. And I just thought, let's tell their stories. Let's tell their stories in a unique way through how I've met them and the kind of influence they had on me. And let's get their stories out there. And maybe there'd be something in that. Maybe my working class heroes, if people read about it, they can learn more about them and might inspire them.
Was it quite hard to sort of whittle it down once you started because you've got a long, illustrious career? You must have met sort of a lot of people. And I know you've always been given freedom in your career to sort of, you know, to pursue the areas that interest you and what interests you sort of is, you know, people fighting power is social justice is the justices of this country. So once you sort of started racking your brains, was it almost hard sort of leaving some people out, I guess?
Yeah, and I knew after I'd written it, people were going to come up to me and go, you didn't put him in. And then someone comes and said, why didn't you put Tony Benn in? And I said, well, I interviewed Tony Benn a couple of times, but his dad was a lord and he wasn't working class. You know, so you've got him in the chapter on Dennis Skinner. But actually, some of them were so kind of obvious. I mean, things like Northern Ireland, for example, I've met both Ian Paisley and Mark McGuinness. And to their own communities, they are massive heroes. To the other communities, they're obviously anti-heroes. But in the midst of it, there's this phenomenal woman called Donna Marie McGillian. I covered the Omar bomb, which was the worst atrocity in the whole Times of Troubles. But this was a woman who was out shopping for her wedding. And she took the full blast of the bomb in her face. She read the last rites, given a 1 in 5 chance of living. She had determination, forced her through it, and she walked down the aisle 7 months later. And her story is so inspiring, and it kind of says it was her, it was the likes of her, ordinary working class people in Northern Ireland, that made people realise this can't go on. And that's the kind of thing I'm looking for. It's not just the names of... I could have done a chapter on McGuinness, could have a chapter on Paisley. But it's someone like Donna Marie McGillian who represents the kind of ordinary working class people of Northern Ireland saying, we don't want any more of this. And the politicians going, this can't go on. So yeah. It's heroism like that that I'm looking at, you know, through my journalism, really.
And you used the word determination there, and that sort of unites so many of these stories. You know, I love the chapter with Dennis Skinner. I mean, to be fair, you showed a fair bit of determination pinning him down because he sort of knocked you back a few times, but you sort of, you know, got there in the end. But he's got that, you know, real spirit, you know, coming out of him in that chapter. Was he knows that a lot of people want him to go away, basically, but that only, you know, fuels him more. And you sense that through quite a lot of the other chapters as well, where it would have been easier to go away or whether it would have been, you know, better for certain authorities or whoever for these individuals to go away. They just sort of refused to and they got something, you know, within themselves to fight on and to fight for what they believed.
Yeah, the likes of the Hillsborough Mothers and the likes of Doreen Lawrence, phenomenal, phenomenal women who just refused through the love of their children, the most powerful weapon in the human armory, love. They refused to let it die. They refused to they were their kids' ears and eyes, and they refused to against all odds, massive odds. This black woman, this Jamaican immigrant in London, and these two Scouse women like Anne Williams and Margaret Aspinall, most overwhelming odds to take on and beat the establishment. And they did. And it's that phenomenal courage that sets them apart. And, you know, they are women. They are women we should be teaching our kids about. I mean, I believe we teach our kids about Diana Spencer in school. I mean, as much as she was world famous, she didn't do anything near what the likes of Doreen Lawrence and the Hillsborough Mothers did. And plenty of others like that. Lionel Skinner, though, was really good. There's the Lionel Skinner. He rang me up one day out the blue and went, what do you think about our team then? And I went, what team? Liverpool. I said, I didn't know you were a Liverpool fan. He says, of course I am. I've been a Liverpool fan since the days of Shankly because it's a socialist team. I'm a fan of socialist teams, and that was a socialist team. He said, and I like Clough's Derby too because it was a socialist team. And he said, but I mean, that's why the Southern teams are crap. I didn't have the heart to tell him to keep his eye on this fella called Roman Abramovich, who was about to do quite well at Chelsea.
Absolutely brilliant. But I mean, you talked there about people to aspire to, and that's so important, isn't it? And, you know, because, you know, young people obviously look up to footballers, and you talk in the book about what footballers could achieve off the pitch, in particular Rashford, Henderson, and one or two others, what they have done, and they're inspirational figures of yourself. But not every kid can be a footballer in this country, and not every kid, you know, has the sort of skills to sort of end up doing that. And so it's really important, certainly for working class kids, you know, in this city or in any sort of city, really, that there's other people that they're able to look up to and say, do you know what, they look like me, they sound like me, and they've achieved great things.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, if you stay with football, you mentioned Rashford and Henderson. I mean, the phenomenal thing that Rashford did, you know, the phenomenal thing, this 22-year-old from working class lad from Manchester got the government to make two U-turns on school meals. Who'd have thought that? But then look at two people in your own community in Liverpool, Dave Byrne and Ian Kelly. Ian Byrne and Dave Kelly, who set up the food banks. You know, they just put wheelie bins outside Anfield and Goodison. And said, we've got to do something about this. People are starving. And it grew and it grew. And to the point where they were feeding 30% of the food banks in the city. They were filling it. Football fans were filling it. And that then led on to the likes of Rashford. That linked football with food poverty and inspired Rashford to go on and take it on. So you don't have to be a fantastic footballer. You know, you have to have a heart, and you have to have a brain, and you have to have courage to realise that you can make a difference, like the fans supporting food banks did.
Absolutely. So Diamonds in the Mud, it's out early August, I believe, available online and in stores. I guess you're looking forward to getting it out there, Brian. You know, you've worked hard on it. It's coming. I've really enjoyed it. And just allowing more people to hear these stories, I guess particularly the ones that people don't necessarily know. You know, Muhammad Ali's in there. I really enjoyed that chapter, but he's a huge star who he's achieved, you know, in sports and in life is well known. But a lot of these people are less well known, I guess. And I guess getting those stories out there is very important to you, and you're looking forward to more people knowing about their amazing achievements.
Yeah, I mean, the final chapter is about the NHS nurses. I thought it had to go to them because the whole, you know, a year ago we were told to stand on our doorsteps applauding them. These are the new heroes. And then we found out a year later that we get an effective pay cut. Mm-hmm. So that showed how things don't change. But what they did over the last year, the nurse and doctors in that COVID, talk about heroism, you know. And I said it to five stories of women in Merseyside nurses who died. But I kick off the chapter about Paul McCartney because I met McCartney twice, and I toyed with making a chapter about him, about him being a working class hero, because undoubtedly what the Beatles did and what they achieved for working class people was phenomenal. You know, just overnight, if you had a Liverpool accent, it was acceptable. But at the same time, I thought, really, Sir Paul McCartney, who's worth a billion, is it going to look a bit bad? You know, does he sit there with Dennis Skinner? But of course, his mother was a nurse, Mother Mary. And we spoke about it at the interview, and I thought that's the way to do this, to lead off on McCartney and say he was actually more of a working class hero than Lennon in many respects, but go into the fact that he would be most proudest of his mother. and then did that. So that chapter's called The Mother Marys. And yeah, again, about ordinary people whose heroism and courage is phenomenal and needs celebrating. And I am chuffed the books out there also because all my money's going to go to the CASA, which is a social justice hub in Liverpool, which does great work for people who need legal advice but have no money. So it's achieved something already by them having me advance and any profits. So if you want to help the CASA and have a good entertaining read, then buy the book.
Absolutely, absolutely. Really enjoyed it. Diamonds in the Mud from Brian Reid. It's available early August online or in Waterstones or a few other places, I'm sure, as well. But Brian, top man, really nice to speak to you.
Thanks, John. Thanks a lot.
Do you remember going to Chicago, John?
I do. I loved Chicago. I really, really loved it. I thought it was a great city. I didn't know a huge amount about it before we went, but thought it was absolutely great.
It was remarkable, wasn't it? I really enjoyed it as well. I don't feel like we got enough time there, is my only sort of Chicago memory, especially because I set up the venue. You went and had experiences, and I had to sort the venue out, remember, and there was loads of chaos about the venue in terms of how we were going to get through, because the PA, we had to sort that out, and there was a lot of drama.
Well, we were going between there and Notre Dame, was yeah. it? So we were always sort of, you know, jumping on a motorway, and me and my Hummer. Out to sort of Notre Dame, so we were sort of between cities, but yeah, I did love sort of driving in there to do the sort of the live event and all that. It was great.
Well, all the Beer 52 beer this month, if people sign up, beer52.com/wrap, WRAP, in case you're in any doubt at all, is from Chicago. It's all from the Windy City.
Well, that's brilliant. We went to a really nice craft beer place in Chicago, actually. Do you remember? It was a long bar. They had loads of options.
I do, yes. Loads of options.
Yeah, we invited some random strangers to our live event. Yeah. Who didn't even support Liverpool, I don't think. Or maybe they did. I don't know. But yeah,
by the time we finished, John.
But we were in that sort of mood where we were like, come along. Yep. Yeah, but it was
so... It's not like a podcast.
So if the beer was anything like the stuff that we drank there, be careful because you'll be inviting people to all sorts.
You will indeed be all over everything. So it's the finest craft beer from the coolest Chicagoan. It says here, I didn't know that when we went, breweries, Bridgeport to Beverly, and it's all for the price of the postage. It's $5.95. You just cover the postage and they will send the 8 beers to you. It's what Beer 52 do. Every month there's a different place. They curate the case to be sent to the lucky members. In this one, expect top US pale ales, hoppy IPAs, and a cast of superb lagers and stouts. But if you don't want the dark beer, you can just solely choose the light option. You'll also get the beer magazine Ferment, and you'll get a couple of snacks in there as well. So there's no minimum commitment if you want to do it. If it's not for you, you can pause or cancel at any time. It's beer52.com/wrap for that free case, John. And we both like it.
I'm going to get stuck in myself.
I'm very excited by this, to be honest with you. Like, I've read
as an ongoing customer.
As an ongoing customer, I'm like, is the Chicago? I haven't opened the Chicago one yet. Tremendous news. I may well bring it in tomorrow for when we're doing the hot mic, but that doesn't quite work for the insert of the show. We'll all see how we do. So it's Beer 52. It's the Anfield Wrap. We're always very pleased to support them, not least because we do drink the stuff ourselves. So it's beer52.com/wrap. You cover the $5.95 postage. They'll deliver the beers from Chicago direct from the Windy City. Enjoy them. Let's get back on with the show.
Okay, thanks to Brian there. Sounds excellent, the new book. It was always going to be. Brian's a great writer, one of my little heroes. I think I might have drunkenly told him that once upon a time, which is embarrassing, isn't it? But yeah, good luck with the new book, Brian. Nice one for talking to us. Back to the Reds, the Premier League and all that kind of stuff then. I had a look at the odds today, and Liverpool are third favourites for the title, around 5-1 you can get behind Man City and Chelsea. You could then got Man United, fourth favourites, around 9-1, and the odds have absolutely fallen off a cliff. Spurs 66-1, Arsenal 66-1, Leicester 80. Just on that quickly, first of all, Neil, are you with the bookies there?
I think we're overpriced, and that's not a bad thing. I think we're under some radars. One of the things about this is, as someone who's been the Anfield Rap's main person to say I'm worried about the age of this squad, which I am, what I've meant by that all the way through is not that I'm worried about the age of the squad right now, I'm worried about what that means for in about 18 months' time. And I think in people's heads, everyone has got into their heads as though all of our players are now off their peak and are all on a downhill trajectory. And actually, my point would be, I think most of our players are moving into their peak years or just about to hit their last peak year. You know, footballers peak around 29-30. Loads of our players are 29-30. Now, what that means is you don't want loads of them being 32 at once. And I think that that's an established thing. But the point is well, they're not 32 now.
Yeah.
And I feel as though this squad, as it is now, is better than the, is stronger than the squad in 1920. That squad wins 26 out of the first 27 games. I feel as though, listen, there's Manchester City are going to get somewhere around 90 points. They'll get plus or minus 9 on 90 points. And that's with or without Grealish. It's with or without Kane. It was going to happen anyway. That's what Manchester City will do. We know that's what they'll do. There's only one team since Guardiola and Manchester City who started to go at that pace who's lived with them, and that's Liverpool. Chelsea haven't proven that yet. Manchester United, it's interesting how weak Manchester United are and the bookmakers are. I was having a little look on Grumpy United Twitter this morning. I just ended up in something. And they're all livid about it. They're like, Liverpool haven't strengthened. All they've done is do Konate. We've done Sancho. What's interesting is we haven't strengthened in that sort of sense, but we're still... in that market, you know, given much
more strength.
Got the injured lads back and all of that sort of stuff. And for me, I do think that, you know, dependent on how those injured lads hit the ground and what happens there, I think that there's every chance we're all looking at each other after three games going, hang on, something is really on here. I genuinely fancy us. I think we're going to surprise a lot of people. I think we can go at a pace. And I think there's something around the whole thing where I think there's a hunger. There's a hunger towards going back to where we were, but knowing we've done it. This is the key thing. This side doesn't just have to prove that it can do it. It knows it has done it. And for me, that should put us in a more secure place. And I don't understand the slightly cowardly fringe of some of Liverpool support at the moment. It's as easy as this. You play Norwich, you beat them. You play Burnley, you beat them. You play Chelsea, Bank Holiday Weekend, R5, you beat them. Then you go to Elland Road and you tonk them into submission. And then you just keep winning games of football. And that's all we do in 1920. We don't batter that many teams. City end up with a better goal difference than us, 17, 18 points behind us. You just beat what's in front of you. And this Liverpool team, to me, looks as though it is gearing up to beat what's in front of it. I think we're overpriced there. I cannot wait. We are back on the march, I think, towards a 20th league title.
Is right. Well, before we get Alison and Joel on that, you are listening to The Weekender. But, Neil, we are going to have a little... play with the format, aren't we?
Yeah, what we're doing, it sort of occurred to us during the last couple of seasons that there's this little thing, especially during sort of European weeks, where we end up doing the Weekender and it's been almost 48 hours since the game's played. And then we want people in the room to have the energy to love the football, but you've got one eye on the weekend's game to come. So what we're going to start doing is we're going to do a live show on video, but it'll be remote through social every week. And that show will move around a little bit. Like, for instance, if it's in an international break, I might do some of what I do with Rory, say, on there, or you might do a pro view with Steve and Paul or Ian. You know, we'll vary it a little bit, but then we'll put that out as a free podcast. So we're not, it's still going to be two free shows a week. And a lot of the time it's going to sound a lot like The Weekender, looking back at the midweek game and then looking ahead to the game to come. But for instance, if Liverpool play Tuesday night, we're going to try and do it on a Wednesday morning. So there's all the immediate sort of post-match energy, the way in which we do the Monday show, and put that in there and then be able to look a bit ahead to the weekend, but acknowledge that obviously, you know, it's 3 or 4 days away. So I'm really excited about it. And, you know, we're doing the first one on Wednesday next week. We're going to try and be live at 7 p.m. because the other thing that we miss, Gareth, you know, we used to love doing the live radio. You couldn't get to do it that much with work, but when you got to come and do it, there was nothing better than doing live radio.
Yeah, and
when we did that Super League thing where we were all on together over the summer when that was collapsing, we had so much fun doing that. We were like, how do we get that energy, weren't we? And that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, it will be fun, and that's what it's all about. And hopefully you'll tune in, listen and enjoy. Let us know what you think as well, as ever. We always take all the feedback on board. Alison, you know, Neil mentioned sort of a fringe... A lily-livered fringe of...
Lily-livered, yes.
of Reds who are, you know, shitting themselves about the new season because of what opposition are doing and all. Like, that is not the Liverpool way, is it?
No,
I mean,
no.
You know, Grealish, yes, £100 million and £369,000 a week contract at Man City. Good luck to the lad. But, you know, what about the Reds?
I mean, good luck to him, but... That is not, it's not the price tag on a football player that means that they're going to lift the cup. You know, if you just look at, I mean, you could probably numerically analyse this, and I haven't, right? But my gut instinct is that there is not per se an absolute guarantee just because you've got a high price tag as a football player that you're going to lift the Premier League trophy. I mean, I'm sure it helps, and like,
yeah, of course
you know,
we know that what teams are spending has a massive impact, but Liverpool have always had a different way. We've very much had a different way over the past few seasons. It's not just about the individual players. It's about the relationships between them. It's about the skill of the manager. And it's about that depth in the squad that means that you can play those 38 games with a consistent ability. We were unable to do that last season because of the injury list. We should be able to do that this season. We should have every confidence. We've got incredible quality in our squad. We've got players, you know, never mind a huge price tag. We've got players who are priceless because they're not going anywhere. They want to win the league again with Liverpool. And that desire, you know, is what counts and what matters. It is going to be a challenge. There are some incredible teams in the league for the season ahead. But we've got something now, I would say, that we have not had for most of my life watching Liverpool Football Club. And that is a squad that includes a lot of players who know what it is to win the league. You really can't put a price on that. So I think we should have every reason to be confident.
I want to go back to something that Neil wrote the other day, which I read, and I broadly agree with his assumption that City are going to get around 90 points. And then I think what you said in yours, Neil, was it Liverpool on 80-something?
Liverpool 84 plus or minus 14.
Yeah. My initial thinking is, I'm one of those lily-livered ones, by the way, although having listened to Neil now, I'm a bit more confident and got more belief, but having said that, my initial thought was I could see City easily winning it by 8 to 10 points. But now I'm sitting in here, Neil's convinced me otherwise, I'm listening to Alisson as well, and I'm thinking, what my problem's been is I've been thinking more about what City are doing rather than what Liverpool have got themselves. Yeah. Alisson's mentioned the fact this squad knows broadly what it takes to win the league. They've done it before, which we haven't had in our lifetime. Players coming back from injury, our star men up front have had a full summer off, which they haven't had before in their Liverpool career, which I mentioned earlier. So there is a nice little recipe there, and for me now, I would take right now a similar scenario to 18-19, where we're getting in, where the nights are getting lighter again in April and May, and we've still got two big ones to play for.
I think all the way through, let's be clear, and this is why I'm not bothered by the Grealish thing really in the grand scheme of it, because City, we're going to get 90 points anyway, plus give or take a little bit, and you can only get 114. So strip that back, you then end up in a situation where it becomes, I'll take a straight shootout right now. You know, you want to throw us back into, we get to March and there's 10 to go on us and City are neck and neck and it's who's going to win the last 10. Take it all day.
Yeah.
And I think there's a chance we could get that. But I think the flip side of this is you can burn them off. You get to, you know, in 1920, when Fabinho rifles it in and we win 3-1 against City, Guardiola walks away, he's given up. And I don't mean that in a pejorative sense. I don't mean that as criticism. He's done the sensible thing. He's written that off then. And he'll focus in on the Champions League and all of that sort of stuff. We could burn City off. We can burn everyone off. It's just a matter of winning the games one after the other at the start of the season.
On the unfair fight aspect of it, though, like, you know, I said £369,000 a week for Grealish, according to the Telegraph today. Then elsewhere, it said that Sterling is on £300,000 a week, that De Bruyne is on £385,000 a week. They're way out of Liverpool's, you know, the top end of Liverpool's wage budget. Eventually, and some fans are saying this, obviously, you know, that tells, doesn't it? And
it does, but they can only have 20.
Yeah.
And within that, you've got to remember they can only have 20. And excuse the market, and I take that point. But what I would say is, I reckon, so you're right to say, the question, so it is a really good question, is whether or not Grealish has got a Champions League qualification bonus. Because I wouldn't put one in. And the reason why is, if you're at City, the expectation is you get coming first or second every year, so you wouldn't put one in. Liverpool do. And it wouldn't surprise me if, once you take the Champions League qualification bonus into account, Mo Salah's on £300,000 a week. Our wage budget and City's wage budget are relatively close. City's, I think, will be substantially better than ours now. If you want to talk about an unfair fight, and this is the other thing that sort of irritated me by the lily-livered like Joel, the truth of the matter is the unfair fight in the Premier League is actually, we're on the side of the unfair. You look at the gap between what we pay out in wages and what Arsenal pay out in wages, it's about £100 million now. last season, everything that could go wrong went wrong for Liverpool. There's a centre-half crisis. The goalkeeper suffers a horrendous personal tragedy. Mm-hmm. He gets a couple of injuries himself. We lose our best midfielders either from midfield or they get injured themselves. Everything that could go wrong goes wrong. The manager has a personal crisis. Yep. We lose six at home. It's behind closed doors. We still come third. Now, that's the insulation of the wage bill, and that's unfair. Let's be clear about this. But what we shouldn't do, listen, City should be taken to task for what they've done in the past, but Liverpool supporters, we need to get on board with this fact. We are a super club. This is a super club. So this season, is Manchester City a super club looking to win the league against three other super clubs? And England is unique in that, don't get me wrong. But those three other super clubs, with the exception of United in 18-19, they've qualified for the Champions League 11 out of the last 12 spots available. This is a super club that we've got here. So let's not all be feeling sorry for ourselves or going, oh, how are we ever expected to compete, etc., etc. We pay a wage bill that's almost as high as City's. Theirs will be about 10% more, I reckon, right now. But we're close to them in that. And yeah, we've got to compromise more on transfers. And yeah, we have got to do it our way. And yeah, we've got to be a little bit different. But we should not in any way, shape or form feel inferior. And those lads in that dressing room don't feel inferior. The best number six, the best goalkeeper and the best right back in the world have all just signed their futures to play for Liverpool. They haven't done that because they're having a nice time. They've done that because they think, I will win major honours at this club. That's what they think in that dressing room. So Liverpool supporters acting like major honours are impossible. I'm sorry, I've got no sympathy for you. And there's a ton of reasons why, but one is you're simply just wrong.
The new contracts for Trent, Fabinho and Alisson are obviously brilliant news. And you know, I said this on one of the other shows we did this week, like, it's mad how someone somewhere will twist everything. And it's like, you know, I was that instead of signing someone, blah, 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 blah. We still got the situation, Alisson, that we've got a full quota of 17 non-homegrown players in a squad of 25. So people are massively pushing. They've got to sign on someone. They've got to sign. I think they should sign someone. I want to see another midfielder and a forward in an ideal world. But they've literally still got that full quota. They've signed Kanate, and that's where we are. And it's ticking down towards, the end of the month. Are you absolutely desperate for more transfers? Or are you all right where we are?
No, I think we'll be fine. I think we'll be fine. We've got a depth to the squad.
Joel?
Depending on the outgoings and what happens there, whether we do Shaqiri and Origi or whatever, I think we've got enough in us to challenge now. But obviously, you know, like all of us, we like shiny new figs, and I would like to see us get at least two in before the end of the window. But, you know, if this is the squad that we're going to have for the coming season, then yeah, let's do it.
The main reason why I'd like to see them as a midfielder is a midfielder who's aged about 22, who's able to come into his peak years in about two seasons' time. That's what I want. That's my bigger concern. I'm not worried about... Unless, if we bought another centre mid, things would either have had to gone very wrong or very right for that to have a big bearing on what happens to Liverpool this season. I'd like to see an upgrade on Shaqiri in terms of doing something off the bench, but I'm not desperate to bring someone in who challenges the front three and Jota, because if that happens, you change the shape and the way you play. So for me, I'm relaxed enough, but what concerns me more, and this is back to the age thing, it's not about the ages now. Those players are ready and they're good to go, and I can't wait to watch them. It is the idea that if we could get a centre mid in now, who was 22, who was ready to play 35 games, who maybe only plays 20, who comes in, learns the ropes, and then next season and the season after, he's a superstar.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens. Whatever does happen, we shall be doing it, of course, on the Anfield Wrap. Rob will be talking about all of those targets all the way through. There is still until the 31st of August to do business. Liverpool may well do business, but it does look like they've still got to sell someone. Plenty of those targets as well, Joel. You know, they put it out there that they can go. So, you know, Divock Origi can go, Shaqiri can go. you know, and yet it still feels like to me like something's got to happen somewhere, like other dominoes have got to fall.
Yeah, it does get that feel, and I know the major dominoes are starting to fall now, with obviously Grealish happening and then the ramifications of that. You've already seen Villa spending their Grealish money in bringing in Bailey and Ings and whoever else they're going to get in the coming weeks. Tottenham, obviously, you know, if Kane goes to City, again, that's another big domino. If Lukaku goes to Chelsea, so there's all these ramifications that are going on around us, around Europe, but I think maybe... That's another reason why maybe Liverpool are just sitting here and riding them out to see what else happens around our big rivals for us to do business, and whether, you know, money spent by City means that a team in Italy or whoever will come in for Shaqiri, Origi, it doesn't seem like anyone's interested in him, so maybe he's just someone who sees out his Liverpool career with us now. and that's just that.
Creating educational opportunities here and there.
Yeah, and that's fine by me. If he wants to give back to the community, then he can stay as long as he wants if no one wants him.
Is right, Divock. Is right, the Reds. Let's see what happens. Enjoy yourselves if you're going to the friendlies on Sunday and Monday. And remember, we shall be covering those in depth, video, audio, and writing up the Reds. That's been the Weekender. Sports Social Podcast Network.